Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. This edition of 411 Teen talks politics rap, tapping into the pulse of young folks. The politics rap team consists of teens with diverse political affiliations, all in the IB program at Rickards High School. The panel seeks to analyze and evaluate current national, state, and local politics. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield, and joining me here in the studio are Rickards IB contingency. I welcome.
Hi, my name is Aniketh Mukirala, and I'm currently a junior.
Hi, I'm Sasha, and I'm a senior.
I'm Emma, I'm a senior as well.
I'm Apurva, I'm a senior at Rickards.
Okay, well, welcome. I'm always glad to have you. Rickards High School is in the house. Rickards is home to several outstanding programs available to the Leon County students. The International Baccalaureate Diploma Program is one of these programs. It offers high-quality international educational study. Commonly known as the IB program, it fosters critical thinking and provides a challenging, comprehensive curriculum that lasts the last 2 years of high school. So 411 Teen applauds the efforts of Rickards High School in keeping education relevant, stimulating, and real. Looking at issues today, gosh, there's so many to look at. Where do we start, okay? I think we'll start with school security, although I know we've talked about it before, but now it's taken another step. It continues to be an issue. Leon High School has received a security building at the entrance in an effort to kind of comply with the state legislation requiring kind of the hardening of schools. It provides a security guard to man the comings and goings of various people who may be visiting the school. Sorry about that. But I want to get your feeling on it. I think Lincoln and Godby are scheduled to be the next two schools to get this type of security. And how do you all feel about it? Do you think it's effective? You're at Rickards. What do you feel? What do you think? And whomever.
I can look and see two sides to it, mm-hmm. because on one side it could be really effective because now the security guard is a trained individual who is trained in all aspects of security and is probably a really good thing for stopping things like school shootings. But on the other side, now it makes school feel like a really unsafe place, and it feel like, in a way, and it makes it feel like you're trapped there because now it's like this person monitoring all coming and going. Now it feels like more of like a jail cell than it does a school. Mm-hmm. For some students, it may feel that way. And while it may be beneficial, it also may negatively impact how students view their school.
Okay. I'd like to hear from all of you just, you know, how that impacts you, how, where you sit with that.
Yeah, I don't know the specifics of it exactly, mm-hmm. but it doesn't seem like it would work too well, you know, just considering, like, how many ways there are to get into a school. Like, there's a whole campus, and you can really enter from any point. So mm-hmm. just having one security building. Like, if you're not patrolling, like, the whole perimeter, like, all the time, it's really hard to stop.
Yeah, I don't know all the details, and I agree with you. I thought about that. I thought mm-hmm. about both things that you have said. I thought about, you know, this is when you go off, enter Leon off of Tennessee, you know, and you go up the hill sort of into the right. Okay. But there's so many other ways. And they aren't all in a fenced-in area or anything. So, and I don't know more any more details than what I told you. So, I don't know. And the other side is, it could make you kind of feel like you're really very, very restrictive and it's unsafe. So, females, ladies, where do you sit on this? What do you think, Sasha?
I would have to agree with the Purva that, you know, obviously this can, you know, be very beneficial in the in regards to safety, but it's like, you know, setting up like a turret that's meant to monitor like all of the in and outs of the school might, you know, make the environment more like just less welcoming for students. And yeah, just that there are so many entrances to a school. I mean, I don't know exactly what a security building, like, what does that entail? So, I mean, I'm sure that's addressed somewhere.
Do you feel safe?
At Rickards.
I mean, is that something that you're aware of? Is that something that you're mindful of?
I can't say that I'm fearful of a shooting at Rickards. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's, like, personally, that's not something that,
you can just wrap your arms around.
Like, I can envision happening. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I guess that's not that's not based off of my campus. It's just based off of my mindset. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes, ma'am.
I think school shootings are really scary. And, I mean, of course. But every time I hear about another one, like, I'm not scared to go to school. I feel safe at Rickards. But it's a really scary idea to put yourself in that kind of, like, to try to put yourself in the shoes of the people that went to that school and to think about that happening at my school to my friends. That's really scary to me. And so, I mean, we have to do something so that these things happen less often. But I don't know if school hardening, as they're calling it, is the right thing to do. I mean, I don't know. It's a really difficult issue, but I think that having that kind of, like, having a security presence at my school, or having, sometimes they, like, limit it so there's only one possible point of entry on a campus, like, that's scary as well. And that is, like, playing into the fear caused by it, and I don't think that that's good either. That would make me feel more unsafe at Rickards than I do now.
I guess the issue is still, how do we address it? I mean, it's increasing. It's certainly not decreasing. Of course, we haven't seen it. We've had threats, but we haven't really experienced that here in Tallahassee. But all the other places that had it hadn't anticipated it either. You know, I mean, it just seems to happen. You don't know. You can't predict it. You look like you had to comment.
Yeah,
go right ahead.
The best way to combat that is to hit it at its root. I mean, these shootings that happen, it's usually a kid that goes to that school. And I don't know how much it costs to put a new building in a school, but it probably costs a lot more than it does to have licensed psychologists and psychiatrists and mental health support come to the students who feel like they would be at risk of doing this. And holding education outreach opportunities at schools to educate these students about problems they may be having, how to deal with it, educating about gun control, gun sense. I mean, that's just a much easier way to stop these shootings than to put an armed security guard who is ruling through fear.
Well, you know, you touched on something, Apurva, that made me think. I had written this down to talk to you about it, but this is very appropriate. Democratic Senator Susan Valdez proposed a mental health day for high school students. It would be one day a semester where you had an excused absence, and if you felt for whatever that you just needed mental health, then she's proposing, why don't we do this? Now, opponents say it's unnecessary and that it would be abused. But do you all think that that would make a difference? Do you think that that would help in any way?
Last year was kind of a stressful year for a lot of us. Our junior year is really stressful. And I kind of made a rule for myself where, like, I gave myself one day every 9 weeks that I could, like, just not go to school. Like, I didn't have to be sick, like, physically sick. I could just not go to school that day. And I use that every 9 weeks because I reached a point where I was like, oh, I can't do this today. And I think it's really...
How did that work? Was it effective? I mean, share it with us. I'm interested to hear.
That really helped because, like, my mental health is pretty good, but there's a lot of stress in life. And sometimes you just can't go to school. And, like, it's not that there's a particular reason. It's just sometimes it's, like, too much. And I think I'm lucky because I have parents that are very understanding. And so if I, like, if I feel really overwhelmed, then they're like, okay, you don't have to go to school. But I know that there's a lot of parents who will make their kids go to school even if they're really sick, like, physically sick, not even just...
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
All right.
And so I think that it's important if we were to have a day like that, I think that would be really good. But I think it's important to also tell the parents that, like, mental health is a real thing. And,
oh yeah.
Yeah.
And then you think there are a lot of parents that really just don't recognize that as an issue or a concern?
I think a lot of parents really prioritize school and academic success, which is really important, but also your kids' physical and mental health is important as well.
Okay. Other comments on Mental Health Day? How you feel about it?
Yeah, I've taken mental health days, and although I feel like, I mean, it does help a little bit, I can't say that, you know, having, like, the school provide mental health days is going to help as much as they think it's going to, because, you know, for a lot of students, the having bad mental health stems from stress, and, you know, not going to school isn't, you know, going to save you from having stress. And for some students, mental health stems from, like, home problems. So, you know, mental health days isn't really going to save you from that kind of, you know, that route for mental health. I'm really supportive of the idea of having, like, psychologists or therapists at school that provide, like, you know, that give students resources for feeling better at school, like, to provide, make school, like, a haven, you know, just, like...
And so you have some options and you have some someplace, someone that you can talk over whatever you're going through.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. You tuned in to 411 Team. This hour, we are talking politics rap. We're going to take a break, but we will continue this conversation in 60 seconds. What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We are looking at various political issues. Another one is Nicholas Cruz, who I was going to say is the alleged shooter at Parkland School, but I can't say he's the shooter. He has not been tried and convicted yet, but he's the alleged shooter of 17 at the Parkland School shooting, 14 students, 3 faculty. Recently, his attorneys have requested a number of things, that he not appear, that his appearance be waived, that the judge be removed. My question to you, he's facing charges of attempted battery on a law enforcement officer and attempted use of electrical and chemical weapons against law enforcement. His trial is set for January 27th. Do you think they should pursue, prosecutors, the death penalty? He was 19 when he did this, and he is now 21, I believe.
No. You're killing a kid for killing other kids. It seems really backwards to do that. And instead of making a statement that large, put him into a rehabilitation center, or if you don't like that idea, maybe even a jail, because you're going to be showing other kids who might have the same problems as him. Because, you know, he had a lot of mental health problems, and from those that shooting stemmed, you're going to be showing those kids that had the same problems as him, like, if you end up having these problems and you end up having these thoughts, this is what's going to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we'll just kill you.
Mm-hmm. I mean...
And while he doesn't deserve the death penalty, he does deserve a punishment. That's okay. Not...
So you're saying death? I'm not death, but life in prison? Or
I mean, not even life, because he can still turn himself around.
Mm-hmm.
And if given the right resources that... from what I've learned, his parents and friends and school did not give him, then he can, you know, turn himself around and really learn to be regretful of what he did.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Where's everybody else? I want to hear from you all. You know, what do you think? I mean, here's somebody who's taken the lives of 17 folks. Some are saying he needs to have the death penalty. Others are saying he needs to be rehabbed. If that's possible. I mean, should he spend time, the rest of his life in prison? I mean, what about those folks that he took their lives?
I don't think he should receive the death penalty. I just think that, you know, being killed isn't, you know, I don't want to say it's not much of a punishment, but it's not, it's not serving much of a purpose, I don't think. And rehabilitation is very important, but I think most of all it's important to, I mean, that he serves his time, mm-hmm. because, you know, like, he should be, I hesitate to say this because of his, like, mental health status, but I think he should be punished for, like, you know, what he did. And I think, you know, death is just like, mm-hmm. it doesn't do anything,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't send a good message. So,
okay, whomever.
I mean, okay. I don't support the death penalty ever. That's like my personal stance on that. And
that's what we want to hear.
Yeah,
you know, and, I want to hear where you're coming from.
But like, especially for a kid, like, I'm not trying to make excuses for him because what he did was horrible, and no one should ever do anything like that. But he, like, I read a lot about his childhood, and he had a lot of really traumatic things happen to him, and his mental health was really bad, clearly. And he was also, like, he was a kid. He was 19. Mm-hmm. I mean, you...
Of course, you know, you can be tried as an adult when you're 14, yeah. 15, 16.
And what he did is really bad.
That's another whole issue. Okay.
But he shouldn't... I mean, no one deserves to die. And I think that in our criminal justice system, we focus a lot on punishment and we don't focus on rehabilitation. And that's really important. And he should be able to not, like, I don't know, it's hard, it's a difficult situation with him because he's hurt so many people, and I know mm-hmm. that if I were, like, the family or friends of one of those people, like, I wouldn't, or if I was, like, at Parkland or something, I wouldn't want him just walking around in 50 years because he killed, like, someone that I loved. But still, he shouldn't die. That doesn't solve anything.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not really sure where I stand. I think, like, so the death penalty in and, like, of itself, it's a little bit too harsh. But
of course, you don't die immediately.
Yeah, true.
I mean, you know, you sit on death row for...
Quite a while. Yeah. But I know a lot of people who would also consider, like, maybe the victim's family is, like, a life sentence, mm-hmm. like, too light a punishment at the same time. Like, and there's no middle ground, really. So, yeah, it's just a bad situation to be in, to, like, have to choose between those two things. I think that, in general, I just think that, yeah, he shouldn't be given the death penalty, just for moral reasons. Like, there's a reason that every other country is, like, almost every other country has gotten rid of it.
I'm digressing a little bit. I know we have tons of things to talk about, but how do you feel about trying teenagers who commit horrendous crimes as adults? And they don't always have to be horrendous crimes, but, you know, 14, 15, 16-year-olds being tried as adults. Are there any circumstances under which you think they should or should not be tried?
It depends on, I guess, how serious the crime is, mm-hmm. because I've seen cases where a kid is tried as an adult for shoplifting mm-hmm. and then not tried as an adult for other more serious crimes. But, yeah, you definitely shouldn't be trying a 14-year-old as an adult, really, ever. Like, mm-hmm. I really can't think of any excuse for that, because even if it's, like, a really bad crime, they can still be put into a center that helps them get over it and helps them be regretful of what they did and helps them, like, you know, build their life back up to where they're a genuine good person and they're not defined by that crime. I know some people would say, like, things like murder and rape are things that you can't come back from. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, yeah, but if, like, a 12-year-old kid kills someone, you kind of have to have some pity on them.
And you also, as I think you mentioned this at the very beginning, you have to take each situation on an individual basis.
Yeah, there's no standard for it.
That 12-year-old kid could have been playing with a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, any of you have any other thoughts on trying young folks as adults?
I mean, I think that children are really influenced by the things around them, and their decision-making process isn't just, like, you can't attribute all of that to who they are as a person. Like, it's the people around them, the situations that they've been in can shape that. And I think if an adult is like, okay, I'm going to murder someone, that's different than if a child says that mm-hmm. or does that, because they have, well, adults are supposed to have more, like, critical thinking and, like, more experience.
But, you know, some folks really never reach the level of critical thinking. I'm not being facetious.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not. I mean, they function every day. They work every day. They hold down a job, they may be. But they never have reached that level where there is critical thinking. Okay. I mean, if you go to a school that doesn't encourage it and it's rote, everything, you all don't know. I think about my daughter when she had to take a multiple choice exam, and she was freaking out because she had never taken a multiple choice exam. She didn't have it in the IB program when she was there. Classes she had, she said she didn't have a multiple choice exam. And then when she went to college, she didn't have it. They did not have multiple choice exams, and she had to take, I guess this was for her law license, and she was just freaking out about taking the so, you know, if you aren't trained in that way, and she wasn't trained to take that, whereas somebody else who may have been in a different kind of program, multiple choice, that's all they've been taking. Mm-hmm. The advantage of multiple choice is the answer's right there. Supposedly, yeah. I mean, I just throw that out there. Yeah, think about it. Something to think about. Okay. Any other comments? Okay. The NRA, let's talk about the NRA. The NRA is renewing its fight in Florida on the gun age restrictions. It's challenging the Florida law that raised the age from 18 to 21 to purchase rifles and other long guns. What do you think? How do you feel about it?
I just don't understand, like, why would they challenge that? If someone wants to buy a gun, they're not going to be, like, unconvinced of that. Like, someone's not going to convince them otherwise. And it's very, like, low likelihood that after waiting 3 years, they decide not to buy one. And you can't drink until you're 21, which can cause you to do some very stupid things. Mm-hmm. So why be given something that can change or eliminate someone else's life in an instant when you're 18 years old? I mean, I get they're probably using a classic argument of, hey, they're allowed to vote. No, they should be, if they're allowed to vote on who gets to buy guns and not, mm-hmm. they should be able to get guns. But it's just, like, these kids are just going into college. They're figuring out how to live life by themselves without parental support. And being able to buy a gun at that age is adds a lot of stress to life.
Okay. Comments?
I mean, like, I know a lot of 18-year-olds, and I don't really see...
like, we're about like to be 18.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Sasha is 18.
Yeah. I forgot like, I'm 18.
I don't see what business an 18-year-old would really have with a gun. Like, I don't... I mean, I don't really see what business a 21-year-old would have with a gun either, but I think that, like, we were just talking about Nicholas Cruz, who was 19 when he shot. If... I don't remember how he got the weapon that he used, but if we don't want 19-year-olds to have guns and shoot up their schools, then raising the minimum age to purchasing a gun can help limit that. I mean, there's other ways to get guns, of course, but it lessens the number that go out.
Okay. And Miss 18-year-old, do you want to go out and buy a gun?
Personally, no. But I have to say that, you know, I know personally a few women who've been assaulted quite a few times, and they carry around mace, they carry around, you know, tasers, and it's, you know, that's not enough for them. And finally, one of them has a concealed carry weapon, and she says that it's just some, like,
makes
you know, she
feels
so much more secure. Especially since she lives in a larger city. And she's relatively young. I mean, she turned 20 recently. So, I mean, I kind of understand, but an 18-year-old, you know, I can't sympathize isn't the right word, but I don't understand that.
The need for
that.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah, I think the NRA is, like, just considering their bottom line, like, in the end. Like, they don't really mind how, like, what kind of, like, problems this, like, could, like, you know, create. But, yeah, at the same time, do I think raising the age from 18 to 21 will make a significant difference? Not really. Just, like, considering, like, you know, just for, yeah, for, like, how we were talking about school shooters, like, just now, like, you know, a lot of them like acquire their weapons from like parents, like or like, you know, like their friends or something like that.
That's right? True. That's true.
Yeah. So for so raising the age, I don't think would be too effective.
Well, they've already done it, and so they're challenging that, saying this is ridiculous.
It would help a lot in a majority of violent shootings that happen, I feel like, because a lot of shootings would happen, like, there's been a lot of shootings in Tallahassee, but not large-scale level, where it's kids killing kids. Like, recently, a kid was killed in front of the Regal Cinemas. So I feel like raising the age for that would help it.
And then I think the kid was killed at the fairgrounds.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see, moving right along. Leapfrog provides... ratings for over 2,600 acute care hospitals across the country. This evaluation is performed on a biannual basis, ranking safety practices. Recently, they came to Tallahassee. Capital Regional Medical Center and Tallahassee Memorial Healthcare were evaluated. Capital Regional Medical Center received an A, jumping from a C previously. Tallahassee Memorial Hospital, or healthcare, received a D after receiving a D 6 months ago and a D 6 months prior to that. TMH is among 8% of hospitals with a D. And when I'm talking about patient safety, I'm talking about things like accidents and injuries and infections and errors. What are your comments? I mean, do you think it's something that should be addressed? I mean, that's something that affects all of us, because if we get sick, we're going to go to one or the other, okay? And usually I think they take you to, you know, TMH.
Okay. I forget which one is. Is TMH the one that's nonprofit?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
We own that. That might be affecting that, because, I hate to say it, but money's going to make a hospital want to care, and receive a higher rating much more than it is just because of caring for people. Like TMH mm-hmm. has that mission of, we're nonprofit, so we're obviously going to care for people, but we're not going to try to make any money off of it. That's like, that doesn't help the yeah. hospital in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But Capital Regional is, our goal right. is to make profit. So our reputation needs to be the best that it can be so that more people come into our hospital.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so then their employees, their managers, their staff, everyone that works there is picked and chosen of the highest level because they obviously That's don't want point. Any accidents because Capital Regional is probably a more expensive mm-hmm. hospital. And if someone, if they receive a lower rating, then it's not going to make sense to pay more money for a hospital that has a lower rating than the nonprofit hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then the nonprofit hospital, the motivation there is probably lacking.
Okay. Other comments?
TMH is also a much larger hospital than Capital Regional, and I don't mean to say that, like, the rating is justified. I mean, we've already established via Purva mm-hmm. why they might not be so careful, and mm-hmm. we're adding in the factor that most people go to TMH. It's also the largest hospital in Tallahassee. Mm-hmm. So
of course,
that
we only have two now. We
yeah.
make it sound like, oh, we have the largest.
I mean, I've always been a Capital Regional person. Mm-hmm. My mother mm-hmm. works there, so like that's been my primary place.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We are going to take a brief break, and we will come back and look at the leapfrog results on evaluating the two hospitals here in Tallahassee.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen. We were just discussing the Tallahassee Hospital ratings by Leapfrog. And I had to interrupt you. Did you have more that you wanted to say, Sasha?
I mean, I am a little bit surprised that TMH received such a low rating because from what I've heard, because my mother works at Capital Regional and my uh-huh. aunt works at TMH, and I've always heard that, you know, Capital Regional is, their doctors make a lot of mistakes and TMH is much better. And when my grandmother is sick, we took her to TMH, not Capital Regional.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is just surprising news to me. So,
well, it was in the newspaper.
Yeah.
It was in the Democrat. So, mm-hmm. okay. I mean, yes, sir.
Yeah. It's kind of worrying that the quality of healthcare I'm going to receive might uh-huh. be less just because of, like, the place I live. So, yeah, I'd just like to advise, like, TMH, like, you know, like, get their, like, up their game. I know they have no incentive.
They're listening.
I know they have no incentive to, but, yeah, it'd just I'd just like it if I wasn't so worried about, like, you know, whether I might die or not just because of, like, where I live.
Okay. All right. Okay. These last minutes, we need to talk about what's happening at the national level. Need I say, what is it?
Ukraine.
Ukraine. Impeachment. Where do you all sit? I mean, we got the whistleblower that claims that Trump abused his office in a call with Ukrainian presidents. Should the whistleblower be outed? That's one issue at all. I mean, Trump says he ought to be outed. You know, we need to know. He needs to face his accuser. Then by law, they're supposed to be protected. What do you all think? Let me just start there. How do you feel about that?
So there's a lot of things to think about.
Mm-hmm.
Impeachment from the first place is, I feel like Democrats are just trying to grab at anything they can get.
Okay.
Not because I support Trump, just because, like,
mm-hmm.
his mm-hmm. term is coming to an end in less than a year.
Mm,
and
maybe.
They're trying to get everything they can to, hopefully. And they're trying to do everything they can to kind of slow his roll, slow his momentum. And impeachment, I think that right now impeachment was not a good idea because it's going to take a long time to get through with all this. And if they don't get concrete results for impeachment, for a trial, for his...
Well, they're not going to get... See, and this is just what I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think he may be impeached.
Yeah.
But he's not going to be taken out. You know, I mean, because it's very... It's by party.
Yeah.
Okay? And the Republicans, at least from my perspective, are going to support him no matter what. So it's not going to happen. And the only other thing I want to throw out there for you to think about, and I hear you, is what about Nancy Pelosi? She was totally against impeachment. And it seemed like finally when all of this stuff started coming out, it was almost like, well, we can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. You know, I agree with you. But, you know, it's like we can't ignore it. If we are supposed to be, you know, politicians and government officials, and we, how can we ignore what, I don't know, what sounds like just a mess?
It's a tough place to be because one hand, you have this president that's been committing crimes since, I mean, day one of office.
And he is,
you really can't ignore it because then you're sending a message to the American people and his supporters that, I mean, he can do anything. But also, if you do ignore it, you run a lesser risk of him gaining a lot of support from not being impeached. Because if it gets to the point where they can't get anything out of it and he doesn't get impeached, then that's just going to make him...
A god.
To his supporters, nothing's going to make them think twice.
But what does that say about you as a politician? We've seen all that's gone on. We've heard all that has been said, okay? And we just ignore that. What does that say about you?
I mean, it's just...
I mean, it's it's six in one hand and a half a dozen in the other. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, they're kind of like between the rock and the hard place.
Yeah.
If they do it, they're damned. And if they don't do it, they're damned. Yeah. I don't know.
I guess you really got to sit down and look at it and choose the lesser of two evils, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And even the testimonies are just a mess, like Sondland. Like, he said one thing, and then his lawyers published a memo saying, no, he didn't actually mean that. So it's like, a mess. Like, if the House Committee is letting them, like, change their testimonies like this, I mean, they're saying the court system is basically a joke.
And what happened to Giuliani? I haven't heard from him in weeks. Yeah. I mean, maybe it was just me, but anyhow, I want to hear from you all. What do you think? How do you feel?
Okay. I don't know. I don't know if this is the right thing to be doing necessarily, but I can see why they didn't want to not do it, because especially when this came out, like, I know they were already, I mean, people have been talking about impeachment since the beginning, and
there weren't any grounds then. They were just talking, you know. But now,
I mean, now there's like, I think this is kind of the last straw for a lot of people, and they don't want, I think that they don't want people to look back on Trump's term or Trump's first term, I don't know. They don't want people to look back on that and say, like, why didn't you do anything? Why didn't you?
That's the point I was
like, why did you just let him?
Why did you let this happen? Even if he, you know, he may be impeached, but, you know, he's not going to lose his job.
Yeah. But I think at least if they, now they're doing this, now, and if he's impeached, even if he's not impeached, at least they can say, like, we tried. Yeah. And I think that's important. I still don't know if it was the right thing to do. But it's, and it also, maybe it, like, helps unify the Democrats, like, for something, which is important, because this is usually a time when Democrats are pretty divided, when they have all these nominees that are trying to, or all these candidates trying to become the nominee.
Yeah, we need to talk about that, too, at some point, if we have time.
Yeah. So I think it gives them something to unite behind instead of just being divided about the nomination.
Okay. So.
Yeah, I have to agree with the Purva that this isn't the greatest time to be doing or trying for an impeachment, especially since there's going to be a re-election coming up, and, you know, if this impeachment fails, then not only are his supporters going to become more supportive of him, but, you know, people who, you know, maybe people who were against him or people who were kind of in the middle are going to see, well, he's not so bad because, you know, there was an impeachment attempt and it didn't go through. So, I mean, obviously, quote unquote, obviously he did nothing wrong because they didn't impeach him. So I think that's just going to influence the election. So.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, like you said, it's like being between like a rock and a hard place. I think as of right now, it's most likely that they're not gonna, the Senate at least will not impeach him, right? So yeah, that's gonna set a pretty dangerous precedent for like future presidents, because they can be like, okay, look at all the stuff that this guy did, and nothing happened to him. So I'm sort of entitled to do that stuff too. Maybe I can abuse my own power. So I, like, as a matter of principle, I'm still not sure where I stand, but like, if they should go through with it.
So many people respond by saying that Trump is not presidential. What is presidential to you?
I mean, in his way, he's presidential because he's getting everything he wants.
That's right.
He's accomplishing the wall. But
the wall.
Every goal that he's set for himself, he's basically accomplished.
Mm-hmm.
So for him and the people who supported him, he's really, like, presidential. But some things that he would fail at are always pushed under the rug. So he seems more presidential than he actually is. And so I define being presidential as following through on your promises that you made.
Okay. All right. So then he kind of followed through.
I think for me, the president should be someone that makes the United States look good. Like, I've traveled a lot during Trump's presidency, and people that I meet from other countries are like, how are you doing it? Like, I mean, it's pretty bad on the inside, and it also, like, looks really, really bad in a global sense. And, I'm Canadian, my family's Canadian, and when I go to Canada, people are just so concerned, and they're like, how did this happen? Are you not so embarrassed?
Well, weren't they embarrassed about blackface?
Yes, I mean,
that's another story. I mean, you know, it's easy to
point. It was brown face this time, so maybe it was brown. Less.
Okay.
I love that.
Yeah.
So ideally, the person who's elected in 2020 will be someone that can make America a little more respected than we currently are.
I bet Putin is sitting back just laughing. At least that's what I perceive. Him just, you know, all of this that's going on here, I can see Putin sitting back going, I mean, can't you? Okay. I mean, it wasn't just me. I know you all, because I could tell you where you were coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
The image is, you know, someone who's presidential is kind of the face of a country, and I don't think a lot of the stuff that he's saying is very, you know, I don't think he in general is very representative of, you know, the population that are Americans. And I also went overseas over the summer, and I actually went to Russia. People, you know, Putin over there. Kind of the same people were, like, asking, I mean, how or, like, why? And
And you know, what did you say? How did you respond to that?
Sasha? There's nothing you can say. You're just like, well, it happened.
It happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yeah. I think somebody, like, I think the idea of being presidential just means, you know, people, like, from future generations can just look up to you, like, mm-hmm. no matter, like, mm-hmm. you know, maybe what your politics are. But, yeah, so you could also say that being presidential means being a representative of your nation and like, you know, the people that elected you. And could you say that Trump is representative of the people that elected him? Maybe. But, yeah, as of right now, Trump is, in my book at least, like, not presidential. Okay. In the slightest.
Okay. We could talk about this stuff on and on. I want to know how you feel about the whistleblower. I mean, should he or she be outed, so to speak? Should he, Trump, have the opportunity to confront him or her?
I feel like them being anonymous is somewhat of an advantage right now,
mm-hmm.
At least when in terms of him being or having a chance of being impeached, because if they're outed, then I know that Republicans and Trump are going to dig apart their past and completely just annihilate the type of person they are. They're going to question their credibility at all times. And right now, the only thing they can question about credibility is, we don't know this person. But say it's someone who's publicly opposed Trump for a long time,
mm-hmm.
then they could just say, mm-hmm. oh, like, this person's opposing me. They just want my political downfall.
And what about some lunatic
yeah.
going off? I mean, that's another part of it.
Mm-hmm. But also, if they're revealed to be a Republican, someone who's supported Trump for this entire time mm-hmm. and has been gathering evidence behind the scenes and now is presenting it to the world, then it's a really good thing. But I feel like it's less of a risk to not reveal who they are.
Okay.
I think the whistleblower probably came forward with this information, like, probably only because they knew that they didn't have to out themselves as the whistleblower.
Sure.
And I think that their safety and their privacy should be protected.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really important that they stay anonymous for, basically, Emma just said everything I wanted to say, so.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much the same. I'd also like to add that, like, you know, outing the whistlekeeper doesn't just mean outing, like, you know, them. It mm-hmm. means, like, you know, outing their entire family, putting them in danger. Maybe not physical danger, but
yeah.
you know, dangers of, like, you know, a lot, many sorts. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, we're down to, I can't believe the time. Let's jump over to the presidential debate, the Democratic. I don't know if you all have been following it, if any of you have. What do you think can be learned from this kind of debate or conversation? What's the purpose of it? We have 10 candidates and they can speak, what, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to get?
For now, on the topic of Trump in debates, it's a really good opening statement, and then it's just never mentioned again. Like, as in, oh, we're all up on this stage against Trump, we shouldn't fight, we shouldn't be opposed mm-hmm. to each other, and then there's a lot of mudslinging and opponents, candidates laughing at each other and calling each other out and giving Republicans and even some Democrats even more reasons to not vote for each
mm-hmm.
other. And they should be discussing issues and just giving their honest opinion about everything. Like, it doesn't have to be a competition, because if you're really, like, their all of their end goals should be for a Democrat to get elected in the current situation that we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And if saying that, like, if you're just gonna go up on stage and try to destroy someone's chances of getting elected and then they get nominated by the Democratic Party, that's a disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Because then they're going to start off with polls really low. Mm. And you're not going to be able to beat Trump with a reputation that's bad before you even start the race.
Before you even get started.
Yes, ma'am. I think I watched the debate last night, and some of my favorite parts, kind of like Apoorva said, like, I think at one point Yang said to Steyer, like, that he respected the way that he had been spending his money. And also at one point, Klobuchar said that she was honored to be standing next to Buttigieg. And I think that those kinds of moments of, like, support and unity are a lot more telling than the mudslinging that goes on, even though that gives, like, good one-liners or whatever. That's not what you want from a president.
Well, we are at timeout, so you all are saved. That's it for this edition of 411 Team. To my listening audience, thanks for the privilege of your ear and time. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Teen archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.